welcome back to Millennial, and I'm now here with Garode Murphy. Now, Garode has been on Millennial, I think, twice in the past. Let me just make sure of that. But he's always been a popular guest. People always tell me how much they enjoy him. He does have the Irish gift of the gab. Actually, this is the third time. Now, welcome, Garode. Welcome back to Millennial.
Sure, thanks for having me.
All right. Now, you were wanting to appear last year, but you couldn't make it for various reasons. Do you want to explain that?
I kind of wish I could have appeared last year, but as people who are familiar with me would know, I don't live in a house with Wi-Fi, really. So I don't really stream. I find it difficult to do online streaming and stuff like that. So if people ask me on, I usually have to say no. For Millennial, I usually make an exception and I go out of my way to facilitate it some one way or another. But in combination with that, my wife was due to have a baby around the time you would have been asking me. So maybe right on about this time last year, I think it was more or less her due date. But she went over, as women tend to do on their first baby. So basically I didn't know when he was going to come along, you know, trying to do a stream. Had I good internet, I would have definitely done it at home, nice and easy, predictably. But I had a baby on the way, and while that was happening, we had a lot of COVID issues with hospitals. I was engaged in sort of pitched info war battles with hospitals about it. It's a bit of a story. I could kind of get into it, but well, you know, that was all a little bit stressful and just having a baby. But so that's the TLDR on that.
Yeah, well, congratulations on having your first baby. It's great news. You mentioned COVID there, and would you say that COVID is over at this point?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I'm trying to think of anything. Well, yeah, there are some people who are still stuck in it a little bit. You see mask wearers here. I'm not sure about elsewhere, but there are kind of more people wearing masks now on buses and that kind of thing. I tend to give them evil eyes when I see them. I just look at them like, you're an idiot. You know?
See, I actually saw about maybe a month ago now, I saw that sort of middle-class mother and her daughter, who was about 8, on the train, both wearing the masks, and nobody else was wearing the masks. I mean, it was like a blast. It's like they were stuck a year in the past or something. It was very strange, and the child looked miserable. And I remember feeling sorry for her, thinking that she must really resent her mother for doing this to her.
Why are you wearing a chip cone on your face? It's basically one of those, right? You know, those little paper cup things. You might as well have a coffee cup up to your face. It's so idiotic, and nobody has to do it anymore. So,
no, and that's the thing. I think for some people, it is actually something that they miss because it was and this sounds ridiculous. I'm not sure that this is the real reason that they keep doing it. Maybe it's paranoia, that they just can't bring themselves to relax and think that they're safe again. Or maybe it's that they simply can't give up on the virtue signaling. And so they need this thing to. I mean, I do think that there are definitely people. I mean, you see them ranting on Twitter. I remember there was one about some guy who was on a flight and he was enraged that the Tannoy speaker said that they could take off their masks or something like that. And this, I can't remember the details now, but it was a really funny thing at the time because for him it was it was a moral thing. You know, it wasn't just practicalities.
I'm glad it's over. I'm very glad it's over because, you know, it's like, you know, the same people who are still wearing them now. The reason I also give those people a look, you know, usually I'm a live and let live type of guy to an extent. But because they're wearing it, it's a symbol of a person to me because it's only the zealots effectively wearing them anymore. 95% of people have taken them off. Those people would have been wearing them a year ago, but they didn't want to then, but they went along with it, right? So the ones who are still wearing them, it's almost like a signifier for them that they were happy to punish me or a year or two ago or whenever it was, they were the people who would have happily seen you unemployed and destroyed and destitute for not obeying their thing, you know? So I see them and I think, oh yeah, hey, that's your choice to wear it. You know, that's your business. But when the shoe was on the other foot, you weren't willing to give me a choice. So that's where a little bit of resentment comes in on my behalf. And like I say, just to kind of circle back to that, my personal experience last year with my wife, it was pretty bad. I think it went beyond just the usual annoyances of COVID restrictions, because what happened was, like, maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks before my wife's due date, the hospital that we were going to, it's called the Rotunda Hospital in Dublin. It's like the main maternity hospital in the city. They put out this announcement that starting sometime soon in December of last year, they may have to introduce, that partners will be asked to provide their vaccine passport at the door. So it's a little bit vague. Asked, what does asked mean? Does it mean you have to have it? Are you introducing it? Are you saying you're definitely introducing it on this date? They didn't quite give a date or didn't quite give a definition. They just threw it out there. So you had many women and their husbands who were due a baby in that hospital were like, what's going on here? Like, what position am I in now? So of course my missus is upset by this. You know, she's thinking, okay, I can't give birth alone. Some of the other people close to her in her life who might take my place, which we wouldn't want to do, they're actually also unvaccinated anyway. So she was very worried. And I just thought, how can you put a woman in her final weeks of pregnancy in that position of stress? But you're meant to, like, you know, tiptoe around women at that point of pregnancy and not stress them about anything, whether it's like a plumbing thing or a bill or money. No matter what worry you have or their worry exists in the world, it's meant to be pushed away from a woman who's heavily pregnant. Meanwhile, the hospital were doing this. And of course, it was to promote uptake in vaccine. They were doing a lot of these kind of sneaky little moves on people to try to nudge people to get it without actually putting a gun to their head, so to speak. And it was clearly one of those things. So she called them and the woman just said, you know, the best thing would be if he just got vaccinated. That would be your best proof of your best way to deal with that stress would be for your husband to just get vaccinated, because it's the right thing to do. And it was just like a brick wall. It was like, well, see, that's kind of begging the question. He's not going to do that. So where do we go from here? And they just again say, well, you know, he should get vaccinated. So they were obviously using it as a tool. They were basically using a woman's vulnerable position, biological vulnerability. And also that can affect the well-being, health, and potentially life of an unborn child. This is serious stuff, right? So I was calling them up. I was recording the calls, posting them online. You know, it went on and on like that. Eventually, we got transferred to a regional hospital more out in the countryside. We kind of privately had discussions with them, or my wife did. They were like, listen, we've heard what's going on there. So basically, word had gotten back to them, and they were like, we think that's pretty insane. So we're going to, like, and here's how weird it was. They were like, we can't tell you this publicly. Don't go passing this on or whatever. But, like, rest assured, you're going to be okay. We're not going to keep your husband out, regardless of his vaccine status. But that had to be kept under wraps. Not, you know, that's what they were kind of getting at, which I thought was bizarre. It's like, wait, why can't you just say this outright? You know, there will be no retroactive rule. If you're pregnant now, there will be no new rule introduced, you know? So you had all of this previous to us as well. There were women who had given labored in car parks and stuff like that. Which again, it's like one of those things with old folks' homes, people like, not being able to go to their dying relative and all of this. It's like a Telegram or a Twitter post that you find, you say, oh, that's pretty bad. And then me anyway, maybe I'm lacking heart, but I'll kind of go, that's terrible. But then I'll walk on, I'll move on. It's just another outrage on the Telegram stream for me or whatever. But when it's happening to you, it's surreal, you know, something like that, something direct. So that really pissed me off. But yeah, I recorded lots of conversations and posted them. And it was the most inhuman thing I have ever experienced, in a sense. But anyway, that was the bad experience. But then we went on to, well, she did, I didn't do much, to have the baby. Everything else was lovely, you know, but this is a political stream, so I'm kind of talking about that aspect of it.
Of course, yeah. Well, the sadism was there throughout it, and in different countries as well. Of course, I call it sadism. You could say it's just officiousness, sort of bureaucratic autism. But it still amounts to sadism. You know, at a high enough level, someone is saying, "No, this must happen," and I think that's sadistic because they know. Well, you go for it.
No, yeah, I agree. It was completely sadistic. There were some fairly insane moments, like where I'm just saying to the doctor in the room, I'm saying, "Can you not just give us that? Just tell us that you will not keep us out." And she's like, "I'm afraid I cannot say that at the moment. You should probably be fine, but I cannot." And we're saying, "This baby is due in 2 weeks. Just get over your rules. Just, you need to just tell my wife she can relax because there will be no problem." And it turned out in the end that the hospital, they never went there. It was just a bluff on their behalf. But, you know, I think on principle, it was worth calling out the bluff, just saying, no, you don't get to do these things, you know. But and now, of course, we have like the stillbirth rate in many countries is heightened, you know.
Oh, it's skyrocketed.
Yeah.
I think you probably saw the graphic that I saw yesterday on Telegram. It was being shared around where it showed the in 2021, the stillbirth rate absolutely skyrocketed. And then it was half down this year, at least with the current data. It's astonishing. I mean, we don't, you know, COVID was very much the topic of millennial for the last two, in 2020 and 21. So, I mean, we don't need to go on about it again now.
Yeah, I agree.
But I am interested in the, what does this leave us with? You know, what's the aftermath? What's, are we just going to say, okay, that was a strange thing? Well, yeah, it was a fucking strange thing. It turned everyone's lives upside down. What does that mean? What does it mean if we have a society where that can happen, where a small child can be denied access to his dying grandfather or grandmother? Something, I mean, and you know, that's tugging at the heartstrings kind of example, but there were loads of examples like that. There were loads of examples of things like that happening. To say nothing of people losing their jobs, their businesses shut down. I mean, it surprises me a bit that how much people are seem to want to just forget that this happened without, and I'm not saying that we should go on and on about it forever. Of course we shouldn't. But I think we need to digest and understand what happened here, because to me, this changed everything. Maybe I overreacted. Maybe it didn't change everything.
No, it did. Like, see, the thing is now, if you, and I thought to myself before I went, came on here, I'll try not to talk about COVID, you know, because it's whatever. But here we are. I'll just quickly make this my point that, you know, if you didn't know any better now, aside from the odd mask wearer, you wouldn't think anything ever happened. It's almost like if it were purged from the history or the historical record. A child who was born now, who in 10 years' time would have no, there would be no lasting sort of evidence of it. Unless, it, so yeah, like if you deleted it from the history record or the historical record, there is no, like even in people's kind of consciousness, you know, an average person you walk by on the street, you know, they're not still thinking about it. It just happened like a 2 year sort of surreal dream. And it's over now and just completely parked and forgotten about. It's weird. They took off the mask once they were allowed and then left it there. It's gone now. But for people like us who were engaged in it politically, so we have a stronger memory for this stuff, I suppose. To me, what it revealed is the, I'm careful not to be too sort of downbeat because it's Christmas, but it revealed the base, shallow nature of most people. I think the vast, and that's to me, that's fine. It doesn't actually depress me because the upshot of that is that there are a certain segment of people, a certain amount of people, 5%, whatever it is, who are special, who rise above these things, who are kind in the face of power, in the face of potentially losing out. You know, someone who's in a position of power who helps you, takes you in, let's say, gives you shelter or whatever, that kind of kind I don't know, could you call it Christian, truly decent spirit, regardless of what the political ideology is. That does truly exist in the hearts of a certain amount of people, and that's a beautiful thing, that it does exist. So the upshot of it being so rare is that it does still exist. I mean, wouldn't it be worse if there was no such thing, if we were truly robotic, evil, base, little worm people? But we're not entirely. But what it did reveal is that actually a great deal of people are. And you cannot rely on some sort of basic level of decency from people. Again, a few weeks before my wife is due to give birth, she obviously has a belly and all of that. It's quite obvious she's pregnant, and it's like November, freezing cold, and we're going to cafes and sitting outside in the cold, because a lot of cafes don't have heaters, because we might be in a town or something like that where, you know, you have to eat, you have to take a little break, sit down, get out of the cold, ideally. So we would sit down on their cold outer tables, and they would come out and they would look sort of nervously at her and think, guys, would you not go inside? And of course, they have to ask for this passport thing. And I would say, I would kind of like in a not too spiteful tone, I would say, oh, you know, we're unclean, so, you know, I suppose we're not really allowed, are we? And, you know, we don't have the thing. And they would be like, oh, okay. And most of them would just be like, right, oh, so what can I get for you? And that always drove me mad. Just like, what is wrong with someone who wouldn't say, listen, I don't care what the rule is. Get inside. Sit inside. I'm not letting a heavily pregnant woman sit in minus temperatures. It's not happening. But most people didn't do that. I think one, in my memory, that happened on maybe a dozen occasions. There was one, she said, come in. I don't care. Just sit in. And she was like, you know, keep it, you know, whatever, just come in. And it was, that was a special thing for us. And when we went inside, we're like, oh my God, we're inside. We're having a meal inside, you know? And just that, again, that the fact that that was such a rare thing was shocking. You know, sitting on steel, like, or kind of metal chairs, that the chair itself is cold, you know? And you're just thinking, before COVID, I didn't think that that was possible. I didn't think there that much power could be exercised, put on people. But I've seen this with asylum stuff as well. I've seen how people can be sort of, what's the word? Very low. I'm struggling for the word. A very immoral. Passing the buck on to the next guy, pretending they never knew you, saying that you influenced them. If the news start talking to them, they say this far right person and a person who you were speaking to recently, you know, that does exist again in lots of people. And I knew it from previous political endeavors and all that, but COVID really brought it home that, like, if the state decide to flick a switch, 90% of people are going to just, they will probably watch you die in the street. And most of them might even know that it's wrong. They think, it's wrong, but
what can I do? Yeah. This is a shocking thing. I mean, it's about two different things as well. The desire to be a good person, but also the desire to just get by, the desire to not fall foul of the authority, which it might be in conflict for some people. They'll think, I want to do the right thing and let them come in the warmth, but I don't want to be fined and my business shut down or whatever. But for others, it won't be in conflict because and this is the thing about COVID. It was a moral crusade because a lot of people would say, "Well, look, these people were in the right, not denying you access to the warmth. You should do the right thing and get vaccinated like the rest of us. You have set yourself aside, apart from the community, and now you're browbeating the community for not accommodating you." This is the whole thing. From the point of view of a lot of ordinary people, you and I did this to ourselves, basically. We made ourselves pariahs. Out of choice, you know, we didn't need to do that. I can understand people saying, "Well, no, you are the immoral ones, and you're not in a position to preach morality to those of us who conformed and did the right thing and got vaccinated and protected Granny.
Yeah, I just don't buy it, because the same people will show sort of contradictory points of view depending on which way power sort of blows. And that's how I feel. I think at the end of the day, it comes down to that. It's power. It's who can dish out the money, who can dish out the firings, who can dish out the mainstream media smear stories and sort of blast, like basically control the means of kind of communication and all of that. Whoever controls all of that, which is ultimately money and power, whatever they say is moral and right ends up being that. I you know, personally, I feel like this stuff about, you know, altruistic Europeans and all these ideas we have, like psychoanalyzing people in an ideological or a political sense, in my view, is overrated. I think it's all about power. I think people are just like...
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, that's all
I agree.
It is.
And the Ukraine thing this year has emphasized that yet again. Suddenly you've got everyone supporting a country that a couple of years, well, even less, a year earlier, was regarded as a corrupt cesspit. But no, now we've all got to, you know, fly the flag and Slava Ukraina and all that. This has been the arbitrary nature of things, I think, has how constructed our worldview is, how constructed, well, most people's worldviews is. That, I think, has been a huge eye-opener. You can just switch, as you say, flick a switch, and suddenly as the NPC has a new program, and now he's executing the program. And the NPC meme is a bit crass and blasé, dismissive of ordinary people, but it seems also to be basically accurate. I think this has been the biggest eye-opener. Well, there are the two things: how powerful the powerful are and how craven the public are.
Yes, yeah, it's a combination. Yeah, and I think it's always been like that to some extent, you know, historically, geographically. That is just a fact of life and a fact of human nature. And then the question arises, how do revolutionary movements happen? I don't want to delve into it or any of that, but, you know, Iran, Germany, Russia, is it top-down? Is it elite-driven? Is it this? Is it that? There's a lot of video essays, right-wing video essays and all that stuff. There's never a single answer to any of these things. It's a mix, but ultimately the basic nature is that everything is downstream from power. And then power is a feature of who's powerful and why and all of that. Who controls means of production, be they tech companies and all of that. Does the kind of development of technology and the need to grow or expand capital have a sort of an ideological effect of its own and all of that? You know, these are the questions we all always grapple with, but it comes back to, at the end of the day, it comes back to human nature. You know, a certain amount of people, for some reason, are interested in things and have a sort of an integrity. I'm very proud, actually, in Ireland, that we have so many activists. I don't know if you've seen the likes of Derek Bly and Philip Dwyer. I don't know if you're familiar with them. These guys and lots of others, lots of activists who are sort of almost nameless. They don't have a public thing going on, but they're dedicated and very good people. You know, there are lots of them. So I just want to give the opposite, the palate cleanser as well. Dozens of those, or hundreds of those people I know myself in Ireland, because we're a small country, probably what, a third of the size of London or something. So it's very easy to kind of get your head around a political sphere and expand it and and enrich it, let's say, as time goes on. So like one of the things I thought maybe when you were introducing me, you know, I felt before coming on like a little imposter syndrome, because I haven't made many videos or done much in the last year, having the baby and have been distracted in that, but I have continued to network and to have people for dinner and all of that. And it is a wonderful thing. I'm very gratified to sort of know these people. And every month that goes by, I know more and more and more. There are probably hundreds and hundreds. I couldn't begin to name them all. And more every day of people who just say, you know, I'm sick of all this stuff. I support you. I support these ideas, whatever. And the good thing, too, is that we're all getting to know each other, you know, on a personal level. We're having each other for dinner. We're getting to know each other's families. Literally, our children, our babies are playing, you know. So it's a lovely thing. So regardless of all these people who would see you sit in the cold, I'm not really bothered by them. You know, I feel like leave them to it. These people who are slaves to power, slaves to the newest fad, the newest enslavement floppy disk update. You know, they are just faceless to me a little bit. And, you know, I don't know. But on the other hand, I do feel, but, you know, a lot of these people are decent in their own lives and they're kind of suffering. So, you know.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing, isn't it? Sorry, you go.
Yeah, no, just to say that, like, I'm not, COVID revealed a certain thing, like we were talking about, but at the end of the day, the smaller number of people who have integrity are what matter. And that kind of grows every day. And you just need to focus on that.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing because you find yourself wondering, well, if this is what the public are like, then what am I protecting? And that's a real question. I mean, I'm not saying it to black. The last thing I want to do is blackpill people, but this is a real concern. I mean, this is something that you can't really ignore forever. You have to think about this and weigh it up for yourself. But I think that you have to hope, well, here's the way I rationalize it. The public are going to do whatever they're told. And that doesn't mean that they're bad people. And it doesn't mean that they're useless. It doesn't mean that they're stupid. It just means that they're obedient to authority. So that, you can't afford to let that be the end of the world. You have to sort of just accept it and deal with it and realize, okay, they're not going to be rebels. They're not going to be leaders. They're not going to be innovators. They're going to be the maintainers, the doers of everyday things and everyday jobs that need to be done. So in a way, thank God they are around in such numbers. That's the other side of it, you know, that we actually need most people to just quietly get on with life and frankly obey authority. The trouble is, the real trouble is not that people are obedient to authority, but that in our age, authority is corrupt. And we are on the outside looking in, wishing that we could fix that. And some people want it because they want authority, they want power. Others want it because they want a good world. But either way, you're still left with the same frustration.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, a lot of it is kind of, you know, just a question of tyranny as well, you know, like authority people, yeah, like you say, people respect obeying authority would be fine, but we have such a awful leadership, whatever you want to call it. It's kind of invisible as well, like who is it even, you know? It's, what's the British guy, Rishi Sunak, or you know, whoever. It's just one prime minister, one Taoiseach, one president, who cares? But whatever it is ruling us, this NGO structure and finance and all that, it is incredibly hateful. And it's, at this point, it's incredibly sort of singular as well, because, you know, you don't have a church, you don't have a sort of a, some other institution anymore, in my view, to sort of cancel it out. There is no other thing. It is in the literal sense totalitarian. And I think it's kind of giving people such a bad lifestyle, like everything from people commuting hours to work to putting their children in. This is the thing that's very relevant to me at the moment. Children being put into creches. I think it's, you know, the way, basically the way children are raised. it's so obscene what's going on with that and many other things in our society that it's not a question of, it's not even a political thing anymore. It's, to me, it's like the way you would look at a zoo. So the habitat that people are subjected to now in our societies, Ireland, England, America, it's all the same. The habitat is highly destructive to people. It's why we aren't having children. You know, people like in, you know, a thing I'm always interested in is Berlin in the 90s, you know, East Berlin. The moment that regime ended in the East, the birth rate decline was the sharpest in human history, because people went from whatever you want to say about that regime, there was a certain level of consistency to it, a certain level of what is the word people use? Certainty.
Predictability.
Yeah, so just like a cat or some sort of animal, if you put it in some sort of stressful environment, they generally will tend not to reproduce. They will biologically react to that. So again, my question is always like, you know, it's not even some political spurgery or ideological stuff. It's just that this habitat does not suit the human being, the Homo sapien. It is not good for them. And if you were running a zoo or had pets in your house or anything, and it was so not in keeping with the basic nature of the animal, you know, you would want to change that. You would say it's not acting right. It's sad. It's not having children. It's we need to fix it. We need to give them, even though they're in a zoo, not, you know, and there are certain, which would be the sort of analogous to a city and a modern economy and all of that stuff. So yeah, even though they're in a zoo, we're still going to do our best insofar as we can within these structures to facilitate and respect and keep with their nature. Whereas the regime we're under, which I think is one of its fundamental crimes, is that they seem to have no interest in that. They seem to want to do the very opposite to that all the time. So if someone said, what do you want? What's your big political thing? What's your issue? I would say, just stop being so hateful, you know, just try to work with people as humans. That's all.
Yeah. It's like they have studied human nature only in as much as only to learn how to switch it off, really, how to keep people, as you say, in a sort of creche like or zoo like environment. So, okay, it needs a certain amount of sexual excitement. It needs a certain amount of video gaming. It needs a certain number of calories per day. It's very, I mean, it's a hideous way of looking at the human creature. It's impoverished way of conceiving of mankind.
It's very dark, and the
very,
thing is
very dark.
Like with what, you know, and I talked about the trials and tribulations before having my son, you know, the COVID stuff and all that, but the upshot, I could go on and on about it. It is amazing. It's lovely. Everybody should have kids, etc. But one of the things that is sad is that a person should, or an organism should feel like when it has its kid or its child or its offspring, that it has a tribe around it that is, has an interest in protecting that offspring. And I feel such a strange dread in a way, because I will obviously protect him, you know, till my last breath and all that. And so will his family and friends and all of that. But the sort of stand in for a tribe is basically the state that I live under. They're the people who tax me, who regulate me, who claim to be my kin. I have a passport that says Ireland, all of this. And yet they are dead set against the interests of my son. It's very disturbing, you know. Not only because what you should expect is support, and that all these benefits that are accrued in society are for my son's well-being. But not only are those not there, it's a complete hostile environment, you know. So I just think, okay, so there's no help. You know, I'm basically middle class, you know. I don't get any assistance or anything, but nor am I rich, right? I'm like most people in that sort of zone. And I just think, so basically I have to protect my son in the face of all of this stuff, me and my wife and our little world. But we're dealing with a hostile state, you know, a state that is bringing in 70,000 Ukrainians to give them houses. So like in Ireland, which is, by the way, I know Britain is having issues with asylum seekers in the south and all of that. The numbers for, not to compete here, but the numbers for Ireland, I think, are in an absolute sense much higher than Britain. And of course, Ireland is a smaller country. So it's we have higher numbers, not just per capita, but just in an absolute sense, far higher numbers, right? Yeah. So the wheels have really come off in that sense. And it's there are so many people. There are people who are homeless. There are people who are struggling to working these, a couple working 12-hour days, including commutes, putting their kid in creche, operating on a razor-tight margin while they don't see their kids, while they're stressed out, probably pushing them towards divorce, giving their kids psychological issues, alienating them from their own children because they have to work just to pay for a creche and all of that. This is all happening. And it would be one thing if, and just to pay for fuel and heating and all this inflation, it would be one thing if the government said, listen, this is, fuel prices have gone up for natural reasons or whatever. It just is what it is. So now you have to deal with tough times. It is a tough time. Now it's winter has come, you know, that kind of thing. You are now in this phase and it's your problem. Sorry. It would be like, okay, well, let's hunker down and let's get more thrifty and let's get through it and something kind of whatever about that. But they're taking in like 70,000, and it's more than that because we have other asylum seekers, like 100,000 or more people, and not just giving them, letting them in, but paying for them 24/7, giving them a place to stay. If they get have an illness, instead of being put, sorry to keep talking here, but instead of, like most people, if they need to see the doctor, might have to wait weeks in Ireland because there's a resource crunch on everything, basically. I'm guessing this is unfounded. I don't have the source for this, but everybody kind of knows that if you were an asylum seeker, you have enough NGO hookups that they would get you straight to a doctor. You know that's true. They're kept, they're fed, they have advocacy for their rights. So me and my son and my people, let's say, we don't have advocacy or rights. We don't have that. So we're completely disenfranchised, you could say, or marginalized. And meanwhile, they're marching people in front of us and putting them up. We're talking men who are 24 years old, who have fade cuts and cool clothes and arrogance of a young man or whatever, being nannied. And you're just thinking, how obscene is this? What's going on? Why don't I have some control here? What's wrong?
Yes, I mean, this first became a thing for me, at least, in 2015 with the migrant crisis. And I remember it just seemed so perverse and weird. And the thing is, as time passes, this is going to seem less weird and less perverse. People are going to start, it's going to start seeming normal. But it is outrageous. And what you saw in 2015 was this kind of thing, where first of all, they say, oh, it's desperate refugees coming from a terrible war zone. And they're all young men. That's the first thing. There are very few kids, very few women. It's men, and it's not middle aged or old men. Bizarrely, it's young fighting age men who look pretty formidable. They look pretty like, okay, this could be. You wouldn't want to fall out with a crowd of these young men, you know. Mm-hmm. And then another level of the perversity is that they're being treated like kids. They're sort of being shuttled around. They're being given treats. They're being given Wi-Fi. Yeah. They're being given food and shelter and clothing, even though they've got smartphones. And then that disparity as well. Why are we treating them like this when they've got smart? How are they desperate refugees? How are they like starving and whatever? And they've got no money, but they don't even look poor. What the hell is?
Yeah.
And then the pressure to believe that when it's an obvious contradiction, this is what power does. You know, this is power operating on a tiny human being and saying, here's something obviously unjust. Here is the imperative that you don't see the contradictions and the injustice. Here is the imperative that you even approve of it and voice support of it. And all of that together is just inherently degrading to anyone who's awake.
Yes. And what it is it, in Ireland, it feels like, because I am convinced we are way up there in the ranks. Everybody always says this, but I think it's definitely true in Ireland right now. Specifically, we are top of the range in terms of how rapidly this is happening right now. It is, the wheels are off. They're gone. I've been talking about this stuff for years, and I would always say, oh, it's really bad and this and that. It has gotten to the point where it feels like we have been defeated in war, and we are standing on the sides of the streets as an invading army is walking around in front of us, marching, and we have nothing left to give because the war, we fought a total war, much like other total wars were fought, let's say, we are completely spent and we are bombed out and completely destroyed. Any men who still wanted to fight, they're killed. Everybody's dead. Everything's destroyed. And we are now just standing there. And that is the power. The power are just, there is nothing more to say. And it feels like that. And yet a war didn't happen. You know, so you have these videos from the likes of East Wall, where this is a inner city working class community in Dublin that has recently had an invasion plantation center opened up in it. But, you know, you have videos like this of a woman with her camera phone for locally just saying, what's going on here? All these men who they're like 25, they look like I always joke, no offense or anything, but I always say they look like a British football team. You know, but, or maybe French, but, getting off the bus, you know, it looks like they're arriving into the stadium. They've got their like fade cut. They're that kind of age. They're, Arab or whatever, black and all that. And, they're picking up a gear bag and walking into a center. And there's some guy there who is like, he's either the bus driver or the contractor manager guy. And she's saying, what's going on here? Tell me what's going on. And he says, you'll have to talk to someone else. I don't know. And you go, so nobody knows. No one, even if you go to the minister for integration or whatever, he says, we're just abiding by international law. So no one can say what's going on. You just have to stand there like some sort of completely disempowered indigenous person or something.
Yeah, this is another aspect of it that's so surreal, that nobody seems to know what's going on. I mean, you can see what's going on, obviously, but none of the people involved in making it happen seem to really know, or at least they claim they don't know. They claim they're just following orders, the cliche. But it's like, well, I'm just doing, I was told to do this today, so I came and did the thing, and that's it. Yeah. There's no, it's almost like a large number of ant drone workers, none of which knows what the other ants are doing around it. It's just doing its thing and then withdrawing. But the cumulative effect of all of that is, well, population replacement. It's something as grandiose as that.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, so even if it is the top minister, the prime minister or whatever of your respective country, they themselves will say, they'll say the same thing as the guy, the bus driver. They'll say, it's not my decision. It's out of my hands. It's international law or whatever, right? It's UN. It's this, it's that. It's the 1953 convention on whatever. And you go, so it's a UN thing, but China is a P5 member of the UN. How many of these asylum spoofers are they taking? None, obviously, right? So it's obviously not a UN thing. It's just so then you circle around to, we don't know. And you just kind of think, we need better vocabulary for this stuff, because there isn't a word. You know, you have like a kleptocracy or this or that, ocracies. We don't even have the words for what's going on here. This is like, to my mind, it is just, I don't know. It is genocidal. It is, the wheels come off. Like there, I can't muster up language dramatic enough to explain what's going on in Ireland right now. You have office buildings that are being filled up with these guys. You have, I think we're approaching half the hotels in this country, half the hotels. Right now it's about over a third, but we're getting there. Of the hotels are occupied by these asylum spoofers, mostly male from God knows where type of guys. You know, we were protesting, I was there. The community were protesting and I was just kind of around taking videos and stuff like that. in this East Wall place, and there was a guy out there, one of these guys, he looked like Romanian or something, I don't know. And the arrogance from this guy, because people said, hey, where are you from? There was a little bit of hostility there, clearly mutually. And he just said, I'm from planet Earth. But he kind of had an accent. He said, I'm from planet Earth, right? So he was reiterating kind of NGO language. And then he said, we're all equal or something like that. And I just thought, well, see, you're not equal to my son because you are probably from fucking Romania and you're standing around in like your flip-flops watching TV all day. And you're being given special rights by a rogue regime that I am a subject to, right? You are lording it over me. You are sneering at me. And you don't give a toss about me or my son or my family or my people. And you don't even care. Because I said it to the guy. Some people were being a little bit more sort of brash with him. And I tried to soft pedal it with him at a certain point. I kind of said, hey, you know, do you see what these people are... where they're coming from. And he just looked at me kind of on his phone. He just didn't care. I was trying to do the nice thing with him. Do you see where they're coming from? Like, I know maybe you're from a certain place and you're just doing your thing and maybe you're just getting the best deal you can for yourself or whatever, but can you as a human being one-to-one kind of, can you see where they're coming from? Like, maybe you're a cool guy, maybe you are, but can you see where they might be worried about their community, their country, their safety of their daughters, all this kind of stuff? The strangest, he did not care because he knew he was in power. He knew he was in a position to look down his nose. He knew every journalist in Ireland would be queuing up to fan his, you know, fan him down, let's say. And, you know, it's just, it's kind of like, I believe at this point we are basically in a sort of a wartime situation, and I'm not advocating or don't take that out of context or whatever, but there is an element of there is a war happening in yet it's not happening. That's how serious everything is now. And yet because of information technology, because of I think the totalitarianism, the technology, the NGOs, the control they have to micromanage everything, they're sort of almost keeping a war from happening by virtue of the control they exercise over people and the how they keep people split and divided. And yet, basically what I'm saying is there's no war happening, but we have wartime conditions.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the young men are there, bored and full of piss and vinegar, but they're being prevented, for now at least, from going to war against the native population. And vice versa, actually. I mean, I'm sure that there are people, there are Irish men who are pissed off at the situation. But the point is that the situation is completely artificial, and it didn't need to happen. It has been painstaking and probably expensively created. Yes. So it's a strange thing for the NGOs to... it's a strange thing for them to create this situation that they then need to police and control. Otherwise, I mean, they've created a tinderbox, is what I'm saying. It's a weird thing to do.
Exactly. They know what they're doing, though. But it, like, as it's happening, like there's been so much ink spilled, let's say, since this thing started in East Wall, this Dublin inner city community, that kind of kicked it off, this new level we're at, because it was it's the last place you would think you would put an asylum center, because it's the like most piss offable community, if that's a phrase, in the country. These are like Cockney, like legacy people and inner city type people, let's say. And to put them there almost feels like a flex, and they do it anyway. And then they're putting them everywhere. And since that has happened, since the protest occurred, by the way, it was going on tonight. They were blocking the roads in Dublin tonight, the people of that community. So there is a pushback going on. And yet they're analyzing it so much, the NGOs and the newspapers and all of that, as if it's some sort of big mystery puzzle to unfold. Like, they're talking about how the protests have a potential to cause division in communities, and it's like, okay,
oh my god,
you know, yeah.
Oh fuck. All right.
And it's going on absolutely everywhere, and people are mad. Like, I mean, you have to be there to feel what's going on. Like, the first night in this East Wall place, right, I was there, again, newspapers, the Times did an article where they put profiles on me and some other guys. They're like, they were there, they were stirring up, creating this all this thing, and I'm like, I literally showed up with a selfie stick, took video, posted it online, and yet they tried to re-engineer the situation where it's my presence among some others created the whole thing. And I'm kind of thinking, no, I arrived and there were thousands of people just standing there. That's all. I didn't even speak.
I know that the organizers were keen to keep it non-political, which is a sort of strange... Well, it's a very understandable decision. They don't want allegations from the past. Like, oh, he's involved. Right? They want none of that baggage. I can understand that. But at the same time, they're going to have to realize at some point that they are in a political situation. And what they're doing is political action, whether they realize that or not. I mean, and that is how it will be framed. And what they've done there, the papers, is said, well, you were there, therefore you did it.
Yeah.
Which is a obviously ridiculous, crass thing for them to assume.
Because I'm kind of saying, see, the thing is, it's like, if I were rhetorically answering the newspaper back, I would say, well, I was just standing there. I didn't even speak into a camera, nor did I even speak to anyone there. I just stood there. And if you ask people in the community who were standing there protesting, most of them have no idea who I am. So what's going on? What are you talking about? You know. But of course, they're just trying to create what they're trying to do. I've been doing this for years. Many streams I've been on, it's kind of like my shtick, this whole asylum industry thing. The funny thing is, I was to... kiss my own ass here, but I was ahead of my time. It was what I was talking about 4 or 5 years ago has like panned out and escalated so much to a T, like I was talking about at the time. It's just become industrial. Well, I called it the asylum industry back then. It's now it's gone truly industrial. Everything, just as I described it, I'm just saying it, right? Like, and it's a phenomena that, again, I think we need to find the language for. It's something that goes beyond information warfare. So what happens is that when news drops in a community, however it drops, news gets out, a video is leaked, something, basically the entire community overnight become aware and they get angry and they talk to each other in their private texts because they already know each other and stuff. And the next night or that night, hundreds or thousands of people show up to protest. They're all in it. And I like to think of that as that they get the first night free. So they protest, the chants that go on, like the first night, two nights in East Wall, you had thousands of people. Firstly, the energy was high and people were chanting, get them out, get them out. There's video of this. I have it. It's around the place. Get them out, get them out, get them the fuck out, get them fucking out. People said, right. And all of them chanting that. You have someone standing up and says, what's going on here is you're being replaced. In Dublin lingo, they say, yous are being replaced, right? And the whole crowd cheer in acknowledgement. They know. See, that's the thing. People know. It's like a shaken up can of Coke. That it's just that little tab at the top. Because people, as much as people, we talk about people being normies and callous and sort of base and weak and all of that. On the other hand, they're not totally stupid either. People have spent decades being tamped down on, and they have built up a latent feeling of being oppressed on this matter, specifically migration more than any of the other stuff, maybe some of the gay stuff as well. And so when you have a moment like that, like I say, the first night free, it all comes out. That's why the media react with all the articles and they try to play all these games, because that first night is free and that first night is real. That's really what's going on. And let's just say if that energy continued without being addressed by the regime, it would go somewhere. Let's just say, right? That is how it is. It would follow a natural course. And you see that and you think, this is amazing. Oh my God, this is how it should be effectively, right? This is a natural organic community response. The first night is free. And then you have the second night and then the third night. And equally impressive is the regime's counterpunch, how they lose that first round bad. They sit down on the stool and they come back up and you go, whoa, they came back hot and hard and heavy this time. And it's fascinating almost, because I had in East Wall, for example, cut me off if I'm rambling too much, you know, that's your job, right? But
This is a really interesting story. I was about to ask you, so take us through that process. How does the regime respond? Because this is absolutely critical stuff.
Well, okay, so what happens is that you'll have people the first night who are all about it. They say, I'm willing to go all the way. I'm willing to, no one can tell me what to do. I'll stand against this, Braveheart. Everybody's Braveheart on the first day, right? And very often they're people who are kind of either in a rural context, they're tough rural type people. And if it's inner city, they're tough inner city type people. In East Wall, for example, it was inner city mams. They're all blonde. They're all standing around having a cigarette. They don't give a fuck, right? If you stood there and you said something to them, they would tell you in no uncertain terms what the story is, right? Into your face like that. And yet, all due respect to them, once the media starts talking about stuff, once the social media stuff goes out, in the case of East Wall, I have heard rumors as well that, of course, you have these power vectors in the community, whether in there, and I'm not disparaging the community, I'm not saying it's criminal or whatever, but, you know, you could have, for example, most people there are obviously lovely people, but you could have criminal elements there. This is just conjecture and rumor, because there would be drug in the inner city, like these, you know, Kinahan's, Hutch's, that's a different area of the city before anyone corrects me, but you have serious stuff in these communities, you know. And I've heard rumors that, like, these connections from, whether it be from Sinn Féin to these old Republican sort of thugs to drug kind of kingpin type guys, who's to say, and this is totally conspiracy, let's say, but who's to say that word doesn't go out to people, you need to get away from this? And how that chain of power and commands goes, we don't know, right? That's one side of it. It could be any sort of network where the message gets sent down, walk away from this. I know you thought you were cool going to your protest and opposing this and all that. I'm going to tell you now, stop, it's over. And that person who was telling them might be in a position to make that order where they go, I had no idea. Okay, I'm done. That's one thing. The other thing is the news. Once they start talking about far right and this and that and this and that, people get scared. I don't know how it works. I think you had your vile vlogger moment, right? And we've all had our little newspaper dalliances. And over time, you start to learn that just because they said something about you, it's not actually real. Like, if you actually go, put the kettle on, have a cup of tea, the newspaper article isn't rampaging around in your house. You know, it's actually just an illusion to, now it can lose you a job and it can do this, but very often even that is exaggerated for people. It's more, it's sort of an illusion of fear, I think. And yet people who haven't done that rodeo and don't know that. So they just get scared and they back off. You have online troll Antifa accounts who call people scum and all of this. They will start targeting the people in that community because they're employed to do that. There are dozens of these people operating. The way I like to think about it, and I know this is true because you've got these moonshot CVE organizations, these kind of anti-extremism organizations, so-called. The way I look at it is that when something like this happens, let's say in East Wall, you're going to have, and this is the strangeness of it, you have this tough woman who's like, I'm going to oppose this. She literally, one of the women I'm speaking to about had an asylum seeker get in her face. And she said, she was able to stand her ground, right? And let's just say, whether it was her or someone else, one of the same people messaged me of that type and said, hey, I'm going to have to back away because of the abuse I'm getting. And I saw it was comments online on that. She said, I can't handle it, my mental health, or whatever, right? So again, it's just people who are, the way I describe it is like, people who may be very tough, and they may even go to the gym, they might have big muscles, whatever, right? But people like you and I and others who were in this kind of activism and been called vile vloggers, etc. It's like a deep sea diver or a high altitude climber. It's, you have to have experience there to be able to take it for the most part. So it's like, it's not that it's impossible or it's that it takes some special strength. It's just familiarity. So the person who is, they just heard about this situation. They just went to a protest. It was great fun and all that. Once the regime kickback comes, they are at, you know, whatever it is, 10,000 feet, and their oxygen tank isn't working. And when they take their gloves off to fix it, their hands freeze up. And if you are familiar with it, you say, see, this seems bad, but if you're experienced, you know that what you're meant to do is follow X and Y protocol and you can get out of this fine. But they don't have that experience. So they're at high altitude and they don't know where they're at and they get lost. And then they back off. And what comes in their place in the vacuum is the fake leadership gets installed into the community. In East Wall, you have right now in Ireland. So traditionally what they used to call it, people can find this online if they want to. I documented it at the time. They would call it the Friends of Asylum Seekers, and it was listed into the contract for these plantation centers where the actual guy who was setting up this hotel and making millions from these people, it was his job to engage with local NGO activists and try to find a fake group to take the place of the real leadership who got scared off. There's another
this
thing.
Is, right this now, is just incredible. This is
in Ireland, they're developing it further at the moment because the organic reaction has escalated in the likes of East Wall. So recently it was announced that 50 million were to be given across Ireland to what are going to be called community champions to promote and welcome Ukrainians and whatever, you know, let's call them dark Ukrainians, right? So they're called community champions. In East Wall, there was an article. It said locals of East Wall to set up anti-protest. So the language itself is really shite. Like it's Orwellian. It's like openly Orwellian. Anti-protest group, right? So actual people from East Wall are doing a protest and the government are paying connected NGO people to be the anti-protest or the Friends of Asylum Seekers or the community champions. And then the government who funded that whole operation will then meet with those community champions who are like a cuckoo's nest situation or the cuckoo in the nest. They will meet with them as now the government are saying, well, we are meeting with the community. We're meeting with the community champions, with the Friends of Asylum Seekers and with the anti-protest group or whatever. And people who are in the organic protest will be targeted. Their names will be taken down. Sorry, I was going to say a while ago, you have these moonshot CVE anti-extremism organizations. And these people who do the first night is free people. The real protest, they don't know that while they're standing there going, get them out, that there is a ping going on. Ping, ping. And it's somewhere in London. It's somewhere in Frankfurt. It's somewhere in New York. It's wherever. These organizations that are funded to the millions and on their little radar, like in a James Bond movie, a ping has gone off in East Wall and it has been escalated up the chain to these massive organizations who have algorithmic mechanisms. They will study everything from the words used, the vocabulary of the protest, the online map of sharing, everything. They'll drill down into everything. They're analyzing, psychoanalyzing, probing everything. Probably more people doing that than are even at the protest. And yet the woman or the man at the protest on that first night, the first free night, has no idea all of this is happening. They have no idea of the weight, the burden that is coming down on them. And of course, they get the gist one or two nights later. And then where the far right association, so community infected or whatever, they'll use very loaded language by far right activists and all of this, because the only people who can have the knowledge and the experience at this high altitude to maybe help these people are people like me and people like others who could sit down and say, listen, I know what's going on. I've done this before. I know what's happening to your community. I know the depth to which this goes, and I can help you. And I can help you just, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I can inform you. And so they have to drive a wedge between you and those people. There are so many levels. There will even be the in-between people who say, and this is what they always do, I'm against it too. I'm against this. You know, you didn't get consulted enough. It's terrible. I agree with you. It's the wolf in sheep's clothing.
Yes,
I agree with you, but we just need to be a bit more, you know, careful about who we associate with. And so it's driving, it's like the domestic abuse situation, driving the friend who wants to help the beaten black and blue woman you know, we need to get rid of her, right? We need to get rid of her straight away because she's telling you things that, and she's making it worse for you. So if you got rid of them, you might have a better time in the media. The media might be, you know, you're getting a bad rap now because you're associating with these people, the people who will help you, right? The only people who can help you. And so you've all this going on. And that's the problem. And that's why I say again, we need language for it. But as this is all going on, you know, it's not information war. People talk about info war, the information war and all of that, which it's almost the appropriate term, but it's not quite, because when you think about that, you think propaganda and all of that. But, you know, it's more than that. We're talking about money being distributed, people, fake people being installed, fake community leaders. InfoWar would be if it were all on paper. But if there's someone in the community who's not even really from there, to be honest, and they're an NGO connected person and they're being installed as the leader of the community, so-called, at that point, that's not propaganda. That's not something you read. That's happening in real life. That's almost more akin to a military maneuver. And that's why I come back to the war military analogy, because it is more like a military, like a wartime strategy.
Yeah. I mean, as you say, we don't have the vocabulary for this. This is something, I mean, you could say social engineering or social warfare, personnel warfare. I don't know. And then each of these things that you've just described, it needs its own label as well. Like gaslighting, concern trolling isn't quite enough. When they're telling you don't associate with these far right people who can help you, they're really bad. They'll ruin your optics and your PR. That's concern trolling. But concern trolling doesn't cover it, because this is highly politicized and it's done with a very precise mindset.
Yes, and every apparatus at the disposal of society, like all these opposition, but it's fascinating here. You will have the main parties who are, they don't even need to be named, let's say the main party who is doing it, they are the ones in power. And then you have all the opposition parties, the Trotskyist ones, the Greens, the this, that, everything else, Sinn Féin, whatever. And they all come out and condemn, which is very bizarre. I kind of think, well, when did it become the politician's job to lecture their electorates on what? I thought it was the other way around. So the politicians will be condemning. They came out in there's dozens of articles condemning the East Wall protests. What are you condemning the protest for? Who are you to be? So it's, again, the power dynamic is the wrong way around to what people were raised to believe it was. You have every media outlet, all of these minor celebrities. So, you know, this kind of washed up singer or whatever, they will all be condemning it, and it's all happening. And that's the thing that happens, is that, you know, I don't know, some person who's,
because of course, if they don't condemn it, they won't get another album deal.
Oh, it's massive. It's hilarious. Actually, it's like, it's proper, sort of like North Korean, East Germany, Stasi, whatever, these images of so-called totalitarian other regimes we have. It's exactly that. It's so transparent with these celebrities and whatever. But again, it's a local person has no media savvy, no experience with this stuff. They've never been called a vile blogger, and they don't know what it means. And they see, oh, Sinead O'Connor is saying that East Wall is bad or something like this. Oh my God, it's Sinead O'Connor, it's Hozier, or it's Colin Farrell or whatever. I don't know. It's like, listen, this stuff doesn't matter. These people are losers, basically. Like it's not real, you know, and they're not fit to shine your shoes, actually. That's the thing you don't understand, you know. This is all a sort of a spectacle, really, and it's not actually real. It's not in your face. So just, you know, it's getting people back to that ground level, to kind of just get down there and just ignore all that. And, you know, and I think that's the future in a way, is to educate people, raise awareness, all these kind of terms, to raise consciousness, to get people to understand. But it is happening. And the protests are, you know, going ahead across the country. People are getting it. And I don't know where it goes from there. I do believe civil disobedience is the future as well.
That was what I was going to ask you. The East Wall seems to have had more of a... made more of a splash than previous. By the way, somebody was asking you to, asking me to ask you to talk about Fermoy.
No, you said it twice, and the second time was very on, like, you know, you sounded like a local there.
Fermoy.
Yeah.
Excellent.
The first time you said Fermoy, and then the second time you said Fermoy, and it was perfect, you know. But so, Fermoy. Yeah, it's the same. It's Derek Bly. He's a Cork activist. It's down south. He is living nearby, so he's covered it extensively. If you're looking him up, Derek Bly, B-L-I-G-H-E is the second name, Bly. He's covered it. He's done the work on that, let's say. But that's another example. So he kind of mustered up in the case of, like, or not so much mustered up. I think there was an organic protest. The first night was free. Again, people showed up to the building. He interviewed them in his kind of selfie stick YouTuber sort of style. And then he kind of, you know, sort of rallied the people to meet again, I think. And they met, and they're outside this place, and where there's a, you know, the details are the same as usual. It's like a school grounds. There's like three schools around, and the asylum spoofer guys are being thrown in there. It's completely obscene. And then like a week later, there is this Fermoy says, yes, Fermoy says welcome thing, you know, in the middle of the town. And they're all sort of, and again, you're British yourself, so like, don't take this the wrong way, but there is a class in Ireland of people with British accents, sort of. It's like an old Anglo thing where they were the ascendancy class or whatever. And it's not just Anglos either. That's just it's a funny characteristic when one speaks and they're like, you know, you're not welcome in this town. And you're like thinking very weird, you know, it's kind of funny. And like, they don't just say, it's not like they're saying I don't know, Morgoth or some like person with a regional accent. They sound like a monocle top hat wearer, like, and it's just bizarre. But yeah, either way, and they're all just kind of generally wealthy boomers who own properties and are on the right side of this situation, let's just say. And they're runt Antifa children running this protest that Fermoy says welcome. But anyway, meanwhile, a story drops in the newspapers that a girl has been raped in Fermoy. She was, again, the story happens over and over and over again, picked up by a foreign taxi driver, or we're not sure if it's a taxi driver, it seems that way, picked up by a guy in a car. She's blind drunk, which is a problem in itself. These things are bad combinations of factors. You have local women, Irish women, who are drunk, vulnerable. Let's not go into Me Too territory. This is not victim blaming. It's obviously not her fault. I'm 100% on her side. Nothing should happen to her, regardless of the state she's in. Gets picked up by some sort of foreign guy in a car. Anyway, she was brought to, this is a few weeks ago, in November. She was brought to a derelict building. I think she was raped in the car by the guy. She apparently was barely conscious, basically. But the nasty side of it, even more than that, is that the guy basically kicked her out of the car when he was finished with her, and effectively left her for dead in the cold. She was found by her, she had been separated from her friends, and eventually, a few hours later, her friends are probably drunk. They realize she's kind of missing. They call the police. The police wait a few hours, a few more hours goes by. Eventually, they see that she sent messages to her friends, kind of half asking for help or shouting through a Snapchat message or whatever. And the police were able to see via the message, kind of ascertain where she was, find her eventually. And they found her with her bottom, naked, you know, she's been raped by this guy, and discarded out of the car. And they find her in a hypothermic state. So basically, the guy picked her up. She's unconscious. He has his way with her, reverses the car into this derelict property, and basically pushes her out the door and drives on. To think that there are animals like this in your world, and they're put there. Again, I'm not saying this guy was an asylum seeker. He'd been in Ireland like 2 years, He's from God knows where, whatever. But the fact is, the more of these guys you put in here, the more this happens. And that's where you kind of go, listen, this isn't some political battle where we all have, is my rhetoric better or is yours? People are getting raped. Morgoth did a video on this back in the day, something about Chernobyl or Rotherham. It was one of his kind of videos. But it was that point that at the end of the day, there is carnage at the end of this stuff. You know, we're not just out here having political arguments for the fun. I want less women to be raped because her life is destroyed, right? I hope it's not. I hope she finds her way and all that. But that will always be part of her story. It'll be part of her family story. These are lives destroyed, you know? So when they talk about, I don't know, we need this multicultural global economy for this and that reason, it's all irrelevant to me. It's all noise, all the politics of it. You know, this was someone's daughter. I have a son. I may someday have a daughter. I mean, nothing could be worse. And this is happening to people a lot in this country. Murders. Every day now, I'm seeing every day is more and more murders and sexual assaults and that. You know, they are making communities unsafe. It's not just politics. This is not just fun, it's tribalism or whatever. So that's for Moy anyway. So as these people, these posh idiots are doing a fake protest on behalf of the Fermoy town. The other problem then is that the rest of Fermoy, of course, go silent, you know, so they don't stand with Derek Bly after. They get intimidated. And that's where you kind of go, see, people are getting raped here, you know. That's the thing, guys. You're going to have to stand up. You're going to have to grow up here at some point. And communities are doing that bit by bit, but, you know, we see how far, again, we come back to the COVID thing, you know, how far can people be pushed? How weak can people be, you know? So it's our job to raise awareness, to inspire people, to organize people, and to support them, because we're not manipulating people. We're not telling people what to do or being the far right or whatever. We are giving people the tools and the knowledge and the consciousness they need to have a voice, to speak for themselves in the face of regime oppression. And that oppression, by the way, if we have any more time, is doubling down. There's a few more aspects to that, but go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, we have another 10, 15 minutes. Yeah. You mentioned oppression and well, I think you said something that made me think of bullying, because a lot of this does seem to be intimidation. It's persuading people through one means or another to just shut up. I mean, it's a population sort of almost like being held in a vice-like grip. And when it tries to resist, quickly another claw arm comes out from mm-hmm. nowhere and pins them down again. It's just monstrous. It's like some sort of demonic surgery that's being done to the people of Ireland.
Well, yes, and of course, every other Western country we can probably list as well, but Ireland's particularly in the crosshairs, let's say. The thing about the reason Ireland, I mention Ireland so much, one, I'm Irish and I like to keep it real, keep it local, right? And two, people don't want to hear me talk about the pan-Western European thing, you know, I'll tell people about what's happening locally. But is that Ireland is so small. We have a population, depending which way you measure it, 4, 5, 6 million plus foreigners. Like, it's so quick what's happening to us. England, even with everything that's happening to it, there is a kind of original population of 60 odd million English people, you know. That's not easy to wipe out. No matter how many people you chuck into it, those people don't disappear. Whereas in Ireland, you have a couple of million. What is it? I've forgotten the stat now, but, you know, some obscene stat of young Irish people who are talking about leaving the country. So they're all leaving, which would be one thing if they said, well, that's the economy, you know, what can we do? You're taking in 100,000 young men with skin fades and like the cool Nick shoes and who sneering asshole young men from wherever. You could easily just fully fund 100,000 Irish young people and say, you know what, have a kid as well. We'll pay for that too, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. It is genocidal and it's rapid. Again, like unlike with the States or Britain, not to
minimize that. Of course, it is more immediately.
It's in your face. Yeah, it is urgent. It is immediately urgent. And there is no room, there is no time left, basically. That's why, to me, I just think it is, again, I come back to the war situation. You know, I'm sure there's NGO people will be watching this, waiting, dying for me to kind of just cross the line or say the wrong thing or be interpreted a certain way. But again, this is legally, peacefully, in a way I'm allowed to say, this is war that is going on. That is what it is. And that's like I say, these wartime maneuvers that are done against local communities and all of that, the installing of hundreds of young men, every aspect of it is war. And to my mind, legally, reasonably, not violently or callously or any of that, it needs to be responded to in a warlike fashion. And that's why I believe the likes of Eastwald, who are currently, just this night as well, were blocking roads and all of that. That's why I think everybody in Ireland needs to, anybody affected by this stuff who's active, the game is no longer protesting, let's say, just with placards or saying we've had enough or any of that. They have said in no uncertain terms, the politicians, again and again and again in the media, they've said communities cannot have a veto. There is no veto. There is no, it's not me. I'm not dramatizing or inciting or anything. They have themselves said in no uncertain terms, there is no outlet for you. There is no democratic, no civil, but we'll get back to that. There is no discernible option for you. They're saying that themselves unabashedly. It's actually quite extremist, really, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're saying you don't get to say no.
Yeah. So they say, and this has been done, what if 100% of us vote against this and we say, we really don't want it? Please no. They say, it doesn't work like that. You don't get a veto on who lives in your community or not, as if it's just a friendly guy who just moved in next door. You know, so they're hiding the ball there. They're saying, they're almost acting like it's someone who moved in. It's like, well, okay, most people agree that anybody can move into your community if they buy a property and they're, you know, not a criminal or whatever.
That's fatuous, though. That's a fatuous comparison to make or way to characterize it.
Yeah.
It's obviously completely, it's radically different from that.
Radically different, of course.
Some newcomer arrives in the village. No, this is dozens or hundreds of young men arriving in the village from
hundreds of young men arriving in a village that has a population of hundreds of people, elderly people, women. This is not the same thing at all, obviously, right? So they're saying you have no say. So what I would, and I must do a video on this or do more on this, right? But what we need to do for these communities is have videos or literature or something ready to say, listen, you just woke up out of bed and this thing is happening. I need to bring you up to speed. It's almost like that film 50 First Dates with Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler, where she has an amnesia every day she wakes up and everything is new for her, but they fell in love to begin with. And the story goes that every morning he has to wake her up and show her a video and remind her and bring her up to speed because he loves her so much. He doesn't want to let her go and all that. Anyway, we have to kind of say, listen, you don't know me, but I know you. Okay. And here's how it is. And you need to catch up quickly because you have your first day free right now. And we need to quickly establish what's going on here. And you need to understand. And again, the basic principles are your protest does not matter to them. What always happens is that some of these quislings will say, we need to consult more with the government. We're waiting for a meeting next week. And they let the energy dissipate from the protest, the live protest, by saying, okay, everybody go home. We'll meet with them next week. People only have so long of an attention span. These things are all cynical. So you go, there is no meeting with them. There's no consultation. They have said you don't have a veto. There's no point talking to them. They have their foot on your neck. You need to put your foot on their neck. In my view, what should have been done in Eastwall the first night is that they're about a mile, maybe less, away from the port entry. They need to block the port. That's probably the main artery into the entire country, right? They need to block that and stay there. And you need to basically dare the state into a Tiananmen Square-style situation. That's it. That's basically skipping all the bullshit and getting straight to the end of it. Short of some sort of thing that I would not want to be involved with, that is the, and the government themselves have said, you have no veto. That's what you need to say. And also you need to, between yourselves, decide who your own leader is, because it's not me. I'm not, you know, I'm not your guy. You need to decide who of your own volition, decide who your leader is, someone who you trust on that first free night. I need to put them in power effectively. Or maybe it's a committee of a few people. They need to be your guys. And when the shit hits the fan, and if tomorrow they stay where they are, and they're going to need to be sat down and said, you have a monumental task ahead of you here. And this is all massive stuff. It's so big, you know, what we're talking about. But this is where it needs to go. And of course, all the other communities that are affected need to travel across the country. This needs to be brought straight to the top, effectively. We need to skip the rhetoric. We need to skip the protesting for no reason, because they don't care if your protest happens or not anyway. We need to basically say, we're standing on your neck now as well. What are you willing to do about it? And the world is watching. That it needs to come to that climax, or just let it happen because it's all over. Just go home. And that's what I always feel like saying to people on that first night. You feel like you're very brave now. If you're not willing to be brave when it actually gets hard, just go home. Just go home. I'm not saying you have to do anything. If you want this to stop, it's going to it's going to be hard, right? And it's going to be massive, bigger than anything you've ever probably comprehended. This is massive. And this is where we're at. We are at that level. And, you know, you see right now they're introducing the hate speech law, the long discussed hate speech law is coming in soon. There's another one, interestingly, that they're bringing in now as well. We don't have time for it, but I could go on and on. They're bringing in a law. It's kind of vague. It's about videos in public. So if you take a video of some guy, like Phil Dwyer always takes videos of these asylum centers or some thing. He's like a live reporter. He gets in people's faces sort of legally and peacefully and all that. But he confronts people, you know. And I know for a fact that they don't like that. They obviously see that as a vector, a weak point on their behalf, because everybody's got a phone in their pocket. Not a good one. So they want him, and they will soon make it so that now you're taking a video, it's being banned and you're getting punishment or you're being prosecuted or whatever. So they're going to start trying to disarm us. People in America talk about the Second Amendment, they want to disarm us. Whatever our weapons are, our figurative weapons are, they will start taking them away. They will start putting people in jail. And communities who resist this will either be infiltrated and dissolved like an acid bath and made inert and impotent, or the people who lead it, if someone does decide to lead it, they will be taken on directly. So again, 2023 is the year where, you know, it gets interesting, in my view. In Ireland, we are at that point. I don't know about England or France or everybody's got their own situation. In Ireland, for any Irish person watching me, we are there now. I'm not saying anybody has to do anything. Maybe I'll stop. Maybe I'll just, me and my son will just be, and my wife and anyone we know, any other Irish people will just be this despised, hated, disenfranchised minority slave. And of course, all the other people will be slaves as well, with no connection to anywhere, no rights in work, zero or contracts. It's not just about migration. It all spreads out from there. That's where they start with the population stuff. But it's like, okay, if we want to be slaves and we want to go down that road, we can just go down that road. We can just roll over. But if you don't want to roll over and you do not want that for your children, then you're going to have to resist. And resisting is not easy, and it's very serious. And people need to get with it, I think. Or give up. That's the choice. You're on mute there, I think.
Yeah. It's a pretty black and white choice, really, isn't it? Hmm. But I think you've laid it out very well there. And I mean, there's more stuff. There are more questions that I could ask you. But I mean,
next time.
I've got to think about the next guest. But yeah, I think what you're talking about is slavery is a good word, because we're talking about a power a power structure that is in asserting itself over a population. But as you said, it's not just over the population. It's not just over the Irish. It's also the people who are being brought in to displace and confuse and disorientate the Irish. They're also going to be, I mean, there's nothing there for them except the Wi-Fi that they're getting just now. But, you know, in the end, well, the enemy is the power structure and not the migrants or whatever.
No, it isn't. It isn't. Yeah. It absolutely isn't. And that's why even if my side started to kind of win and escalate and take more power sort of type of thing and get more, let's say, popular and sort of, I don't know, move into a winning position. My first thing, and this isn't rhetoric, this isn't me trying to appeal to NGOs or something. My first thing would be say, this is not those people. Now, a lot of these people are arrogant and taking advantage and, you know, they should be deported effectively. But this is not, don't worry. It's the power structure at hand that is relevant here. And again, it is real. It's our children here. You know, I come back to having a kid. I'm going to, you know, if I'm lucky, I'll live to an old age and my son will be there by my bed when I die, you know. And it's, you know, same way a year passes quickly, life will pass quickly, you know. Something has to matter in that. And that thing has to be a basic level of freedom, of a decent lifestyle, a decent world for me to give to my son and him to his. And just like your video on, I forget how you titled it, your speech you gave recently about the future.
Siblings in a world.
Yes. We're not asking for a lot. I'm not asking for a gay space communism 2000 here. Like, you know, this isn't even massively ideological. You know, these are basic things. Like in your video, you were talking about, you know, having a village and having people you know and a decent, you know, opportunities for people and all of this. These are really basic things here. It's not even, like I say, it's not that political or ideological. These are basic things we're asking for.
Yeah, it's just the means to have a meaningful and peaceful life.
As a natural human being.
Yeah, and this brings us back to what we were saying at the start, where that is what's denied us now. I mean, we're denied the means and the tools, both spiritual and in every other way, financial, cultural, social, by which to have a life that used to come very naturally to people. That, I mean, it was the whole point of society and culture, was to guide people towards continuance and fulfilment.
Oh, and
Not
to cut across or anything, but just one thing is that the fake argument that's put out there by a lot of technocrats, more people who are paid to lie and all of this, is and I'm sure you've thought about this plenty yourself and a lot of the viewers. We live in a globalized economy. We can't go back to, like, you know, the Shire or whatever, blah blah blah. These arguments are, some of them are reasonable. Some of them are difficult for people like us of our disposition to contend with. You have to reconcile with that. At the end of the day, it's very simple. No matter what you say about a global economy and aeroplanes exist and all of this kind of stuff, there is no connection between that and bringing hundreds of thousands of people in while people are poor and suffering and putting them up in hotels and marching them into communities. This isn't just some sort of technological phenomenon just taking place. You were expending massive amounts of effort and energy on this. This is not just happening. And that's probably the last thing I would say as a feature of everything else. That is one of the big things they throw out there. That has to be dismissed. You don't even argue with that. You just dismiss it straight away on that basic fact. You're going to a lot of effort for this stuff. If things were left to just be what they are, this wouldn't be happening, regardless of aeroplanes and multinational companies. I don't know. I forget the next bit. Yeah.
Well, it's not just happening organically. This is a thing that they'll say, and you hear it from young, naive, idiot, liberal, progressive women. They'll say, well, it's just the way the world is now. Well, no, it's not, actually. This is entirely arbitrary. It's not just the way the world is that a guy can go over to a country he has never been to before and just claim asylum, claim refugee status or whatever, and get us a hotel room. Hmm. Right? That doesn't emerge as just by accident.
No. It has no relationship to any sort of natural, human, technological, economic phenomenon. It's completely disconnected, intentional, malicious,
and artificial. It needs a lot to keep it going as well. But I think maybe what you were getting back to was about a sustainable life, a peaceful life. That should not be too much to ask for. And indeed, with the speech, I'm not going to go into it now because it would be a huge tangent and it's not about me. But with the speech, that was basically the point. It was for what most people need, what the vast majority of people need is the village, is the shire. And exceptions, nuances, anomalies, weirdos, we don't... yeah, of course they exist. And of course they're always going to exist. But society needs to be geared for the norm. And those norms should be healthy. I mean, it's just... this is absolute common sense.
Completely simple, yeah. Easy. Yeah.
So, that's a whole other topic, though. Okay, I'll run you through these questions that have come in.
Sure. And you can ask me any question. I don't know if there's something maybe you want to bring up or not. Feel free to mention whatever.
Well, we didn't talk about the National Party attack by Antifa a few weeks ago, but is there anything you'd want to say about that?
Article. I mean, it's just more regime nonsense. Like, we have articles going around about this and that abuse online. You have like leaders of the country who are saying, "I get mean things said about me. We need new laws to suppress this, right? Because there's mean things said about me online." Meanwhile, I'm saying, "Well, what about the Antifa who are threatening?" Here's one for you. I have it here. This is just, of course, whoever wrote this originally will think, "Oh, I've really gotten to him. Nobody gets to me, right? On this stuff, not these people." I'm just illustrating the point to show you. While politicians give out about that, I have said things said about me, even though I'm in power and completely protected. I have what someone said about me. This was in December 21, which was around the time when my son was born, of course. So they were getting at that. They said, "We have over 200 photos, videos." This is an anonymous account, by the way. "We have over 200 photos, videos, social media posts, YouTube and BitChute videos you created archived. Your child will be removed from you. You are a far-right terrorist. The guards have your 2018 video," also, whatever that means. That's irrelevant. I have nothing legal or anything. But again, they're saying, "We'll take your child off you. We know where you are," all this kind of stuff, right? Irrelevant. But more than that, even more than that, just an internet comment, whatever. I put it out there willingly. I reshared that at the time because I want people to see that, you know, what's being said. That doesn't bother me. I just want people, I want to vocalize that more, you know, because I want it to be known that that's been said.
Absolutely, because for a lot of people, it would get to them. You know, for a lot of people, being told that would freak them out and they would.
Oh, yeah.
That would be the thing that caused them to step
back. This is why I'm talking about the first night free for the asylum seeker center thing. The people who are natural leaders, they get scared off the second night because, of course, I'm able to not to, again, I'm not that smart or brave or any of that. Actually very much neither of those things probably, but what I have is experience. It's just experience built up over time to be able to handle that altitude and see a comment like that and just think, it's not getting in. I'm just going to highlight it, but it's not getting in here. That doesn't actually scare me. But to a normal, reasonable, sensible person, that it's cortisol, right? So these are biological systems happening. But again, not only that, that pales in comparison to, so the government leaders are annoyed about hate speech. Meanwhile, that said about me, I have no rights. I have no advocacy for me, right? Doesn't matter. And more so again, the National Party have what, dozens of criminal people arrive at their meeting in a private political meeting in a hotel, legal, reasonable meeting in a hotel. They're attacked by dozens of people with hammers, balaclavas, and not a peep, nothing in the media, right? You saw last year, Dave Cullen put up I can say this because he put up the videos himself where he was being terrorized in his own home. Nothing. There was no Irish Times. There was no RT, not a word. So again, it's just, you know, how else do you describe a situation like that, but sort of in context of war, right? Because that's what we're talking about. There's no reasoning with that anymore. Where you say, okay, so they can literally attack us with hammers. Someone there had their tendons damaged. They're in trouble with their hand needs to be rehabilitated, all that. People were injured. People were hurt. And there hasn't been a word said anywhere about it. So that's, again, I come back to, you might say, oh, you're over-egging the pudding here with this kind of the idea that it's a sort of a latent war going on. Well, no, how am I really when you're being attacked with hammers and deadly weapons effectively? And it's, there's a siren. I don't know if you can hear it through the mic, just a siren.
Yeah.
Again, you're in that position. Where you go, well, what am I supposed to do about that? So again, you know, that might be the National Party today, but it's the average community protester tomorrow who doesn't want hundreds of men moving across from a girls' school or whatever. I mean, the state are willing to, by proxy, let's say, and this is well established, do violence against us and others who resist their tyranny. So, you know.
Yeah,
We don't respond in kind, but we need to respond in quite a serious fashion within moral and legal limits, let's say, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Okay. Defiant Irishman asks, Garode, where can I contact you? I have a friend who needs an operation and his local hospital are demanding a PCR test before they do anything.
I'm on Twitter. My DMs are open. I don't like to give every sort of email and number to people because it's asymmetrical, right? I don't know who everybody else is, but they might know me or whatever. So I'm on Twitter. If you want to send me messages about that. Also, for anybody who wants to message me about stuff like this, or anybody, you yourself included, you know, if you want to explain a situation to somebody, you need to offer sort of evidence so that it's not some Mickey Mouse thing, you know. If someone's going to give you the time to actually open an email and perhaps engage in real life stuff, actually get in their car and go somewhere, do something or put themselves out there, you need to go to the effort to make that digestible and believable and real and verifiable. And then maybe I have time in my life to help with that. But I mean, I'm open to, that sounds bad. I was in a similar position myself. So DM me on Twitter. If you at Garode Murphy if you like.
Yeah, it's a real thing. Your time is limited. You're only one guy. It's understandable. Don't worry about that. Okay, you know, it says, congrats on the baby, Mr. Murphy. Have a few more, will you?
Oh, there I intend go. To. Yeah. I just want to say for people, a quick one, just about having a baby. If you were in a loving relationship, I'm not talking to you. I don't know all your situation, right? That's your business. This, I'm not speaking to you. I'm speaking to the audience. Just in case you thought it was a direct message or something to you. people might start to like feel confronted or whatever. If you're in a loving relationship and you're, you know, you have a roof over your head, rented or otherwise, just, you know, having done it now, I see it's such a pity if people are in a loving, decent relationship, married or otherwise, and they kind of think, well, I would have a kid with this person. I do love them and I do have a house, a roof over my head. But I haven't got X, Y, and Z ready. Like that X, Y, and Z, once you have the basics, like you're not going to not have a roof over your head. You're going to have, whether you have a child or not, you're going to live somewhere. So charity shops, you know, people have built this thing up where you need to spend 30, 40 grand on all this fancy kid stuff and you need to do this whole ritual about having a kid. No, you don't. Have the kid. The stuff is cheap if you want it to be. And it's fun. And like, you know, it's pretty... It's cool. I consider my kid, like, if I'm out in public with my kid walking around, I feel like I'm like how some people would feel if they were driving a Ferrari. I feel like this is the coolest thing. I have the best thing I could ever have. I feel amazing. I feel, you know, I don't know. I don't have words, you know, so people should. Anyway, go ahead.
All right. Great. Fantastic. All right. Okay, but we've talked about that. The National Party. The attack on them. He says this represents how everything is escalating across our civilization. So nothing will stop the rise of nationalism. There we go. Reactor says fantastic points made by Garode. Irish nationalist media says massive escalation of the invasion of Ireland and Irish people's reaction is very white pilling. East Wall, Ballyfermot, and so on. In a large warehouse I work in, Irish people openly talk and complain about this. They know they're not Ukrainians, but Arab and African men, even Eastern Europeans, are agreeing with us. Okay, excellent. That's encouraging. Caesar himself says, long live Ireland and the Irish, Northern and Southern, Ulstermen and Airmen, Catholic and Protestant. The current year doesn't know what it's fucking with. Okay, Define Irishman says, superb stream. This is really getting my blood pumping. Garrod's point about rich, runt Antifa children cannot be understated. These animals are all over this country. I hate them with a burning passion. He means the Antifa, middle class people.
Sure.
Yeah, and then he further goes on to say, two gay men were murdered in, Sligo town, by a Muslim who used Grindr to find his victims. The media shut up about it when they found out he wasn't Irish. A 24-year-old woman was murdered in Offaly by a Roma gypsy. Again, the lying media shut up about it when they found out he wasn't Irish. Yeah, this seems to be a thing, and it's happened in other countries as well, that the news coverage just stops once the perpetrator is not what they want him to be. Some random bloke asks, isn't Ireland bringing in anti-Semitism laws so you get 5 years jail just for having anti-Semitic material? Do you know anything about that?
Well, not in detail, but I've been, you know, I've heard the rumblings about that stuff for quite some time. I'm going to plug something I did in my Substack. I think it's the only thing I have on Substack. It's called International Zionism Declares War on Ireland. It was one I wrote. It's one of the few things I did since I last spoke to you, like a concrete actual thing. The whole thing is fascinating, you know, there, but it's another story.
All right. And then Black Pigeon Pilled says, it's not an inevitability, rather it's a conscious choice by our corrupt elites. We were talking about how this is not inevitable or natural or organic. All right. Let's leave it at that. This has been a fantastic conversation. I think one of the best ones so far, definitely. So I'm glad we were able to arrange it.
Yeah, thanks. And, you know, I love your your intro and all of that, just to your the whole persona you've built up as like you're Colin, but the millennial woes thing. I always kind of, because I know you now, you know, pretty well. but it's sometimes I think about, oh, yeah, there's this kind of aesthetic, you know, I love that. And I'm very grateful as well to be on with, I think tonight it's Martin, Ricardo Duchesne and Semiagog. I think they're all fairly cool, like, so I'm kind of, it's cool to be in that.
None of them are as cool as you, though.
Well, thanks very much. Yeah.
You're the coolest one, especially because you mentioned the aesthetic. That's very good. Thank you.
Okay, well, it's a fair trade then between the two of us, compliment wise. No, thanks for having me on, and happy Christmas to you and to everybody else. So appreciate anybody listening to me, and have a good one. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Garrod Murphy. Okay, I'll be back in about 5 minutes with Ricardo Duchesne. In the meantime, bye-bye for now.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The show must go on, but it needs your help. Bitcoin, Ethereum, Monero, and other cryptocurrencies are all very welcome. Get the info you need at millennial.com/crypto and make your donation today. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile blogger. Please help him continue. Until next time, enjoy the show and spread the word.